discussing this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 19. We're going to read text 24, and then there's a companion set of verses, which is Chapter 19, text 36 through 40. And the subject matter is Maharaj Parikshit's questions. There's two questions that he's presenting, first to the sages in text 24, and then again, almost verbatim, to Shukadeva Goswami. And the focus will go on what the questions are and his mood, both. So it's both content and the mood of receiving, like we were speaking of yesterday. It's kind of a continuation of that, the mood of receiving. So text 24, I'll read the translation and purport. O trustworthy brahmanas, here Maharaj Parikshit is, Shukadeva Goswami hasn't arrived yet. It's the sages who have gathered. The occasion of the cursing of Maharaj Parikshit, and he would die in 7 days. So they've come to be with him. You know, one can imagine if there's some passing of an individual in a place, somebody in Detroit here, somebody was going to die, and it was known, so everybody comes. And especially because he's the king, the sages come. And so what does the person who's about to die say to that assembly? Here's what he says. O trustworthy brahmanas, I now ask you about my immediate duty. Please, after proper deliberation, tell me of the unalloyed duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically of those who are just about to die. And I'll read Prabhupada's purport. Very nice. Short. In this verse, the king has placed two questions before the learned sages. The first question is, what is the duty of everyone in all circumstances? And the second question is, what is the specific duty of one who is to die? Very shortly. Of course, that's not us, right? We're not to die very shortly because we're going to live a long time. Cross our fingers. Out of the two, the question relating to the dying man is most important. He doesn't even say more important. He says most important because everyone is a dying man. Are you a dying man? Are you dying? Are you dying? Nandasuno? You're dying? No. I'm young. I'm energetic. Everyone is a dying man, either very shortly or after 100 years, a dying man. The duration of life is immaterial. But the duty of a dying man is very important. Maharaj Parikshit has placed these two questions before Shukadeva Goswami also on his arrival, which we will read. And practically the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning from the second canto up to the last 12th canto deals with these two questions. So they're important questions. They're appropriate questions. And how he asks it, you know, like the precision with which the question is posed and the spirit behind the question are very important. It shows his qualification. The conclusion arrived at thereof is that devotional service of the Lord Sri Krishna, as is confirmed by the Lord himself in the last phases of Bhagavad Gita, is the last word in relation to everyone's permanent duty in life. Maharaj Parikshit was already aware of this fact. So if he's already aware of this fact, why is he asking it? It's redundant. No. He wanted the great sages assembled there to unanimously give their verdict on his conviction, so that he might be able to go on with his confirmed duty without controversy. He has especially mentioned the word shuddha, or perfectly correct. And Prabhupada explains why he chose that word. For transcendental realization or self-realization, many processes are recommended by various classes of philosophers. Some of them are first-class methods, plural. Some of them are second or third-class methods. The first-class method demands that one give up all other methods and surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord and thus be saved from all sins and their reactions. End of purport. So, specifically, these two questions that are asked by the sages, they constitute absolutely the next three chapters of the second canto, the first three chapters of the second canto, the next three chapters that follow the conclusion of chapter 19 or the first canto. So, in one sense, the first canto is a build-up to these questions, and the second canto, first three chapters, summarizes the answer. And then, having heard the answer, Maharaj Parikshit asks further questions that are expanding on that answer. And that's the question-answer method is standard in scripture and in life. And I'll repeat something already spoken. The particular question that's raised is important, and the spirit behind the question is just as important. The question should be relevant. Somebody asked me the other day, what do I mean by, that's a college question. I say that sometimes. It's another way of saying what Prabhupada said even more strongly is, you know, that's a useless question. It's conceptual and theoretical, but what does it have to do with, what's the spirit behind the question in terms of achieving the goal of life? If it's merely academic and it's just another piece of information in your information basket, practically speaking, what's the value of it? Like Prabhupada's discussion this is a whole discussion in itself, because that question should be of meaningful application. Spirit behind it, not just, you know, it says something over here and it says something over there. And how does this, which seems to contradict that, reconcile? As it like an intellectual exercise. The discerning faculty, you know, it's like, you know, IQ tests do stuff like that. What's similar between these things? Or here's a, you know, multiple choice. Here's something, which one is similar to this one? You know, so it's to extract a principle and see how the principle applies elsewhere. That's intelligence. You can gather the essence of something and see how that essence of something can work. But if it remains, like in Prabhupada's discussion with Professor Durkheim was arguing knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada was saying, no. What's the practical application? Even if one has knowledge, it's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake. It's useless without practical application. Say it in reverse. Knowledge is meant for practical application. Gyanam vigyanam. Astikyam. Brahma karma svabhavajam. A truly learned person must not only know how to apply a thing, but must apply the thing that he knows how to apply, not just do as I say, not as I do. The do as I say, not as I do, what's that? What's the word for people that, you know, say one thing and do another thing? Hypocrite. Yeah, hypocrite. And who has respect and regard for a hypocrite? Say one thing, do another thing. It loses the respect or the placing of faith in a person who does one thing and does another thing. And, you know, persons may not say that, but they feel that. So, the questions of Maharaj Parikshit to the sages are relevant. Like, highly relevant. He's about to die, and his question is, what to do? And just present a little bit how he phrases the question. Tatashchava prichcham imam vipriche. Prichcham, that which is to be determined, or that which is to be asked, I'm asking. So it's relevant. It's to be asked. And so I'm presenting to you, the brahmanas, vipra, then he adds an adjective. What kind of brahmana? So Prabhupada has explained that this word vipra is a certain type of brahmana. There are some brahmanas that are very expert in rituals. And a vipra isn't necessarily expert in rituals, but they're very learned in the scripture. And here he's using the word vishrambhya vipra. Vishrambhya means trustworthy brahmanas. He's honoring them in that way. And he's Maharaj Parikshit. He's even before he was born and during his early childhood and throughout his life, he's been surrounded by the most qualified persons. So he knows the difference between those that are trustworthy and those that are not. So by addressing them as trustworthy, he's invoking that finest quality of discrimination that they have. And this is an item of Vaishnava relationships. That is, when we... flattery is nonsense. It's polluting for the person who speaks it and the person who receives it. But this isn't flattery. This is, he's evoking and invoking that capacity that they have by respecting them according to the capacity that they have. You are worthy of my faith. I'm trusting upon you to give the finest of discrimination in the matter of, you know, whatever the following question is going to be. I'll say it again in practical terms for us. We should be discriminating about who we approach for trustworthy advice. But when someone is trustworthy, we should approach with that openness of heart and express in explicit terms, as he's doing, I trust you. I mean, when someone says that to you, what does that do? Wow, I better be very careful here. This person is trusting me. They're placing their faith in me. I need to be very careful. And, you know, not being sloppy or careless or, you know, absent-minded or inattentive, or I need to, because they're reposing trust. Like something that's coming to mind is a recent example of this. I shared with you last night these two airline stewardesses from Southwest, and, you know, for 2 hours. 2 hours in the front of the plane with the whole plane watching us having a conversation about Krishna consciousness. You know, because they were over where the drinks thing were, and I was in the aisle right by the bathroom, and anytime anybody had to, it was so tight, anytime I had to go into the bathroom, I had to move just to let the door open. That's, you know, where the position, and I could see in the back, all the way to the back of the plane, and everyone in the back of the plane could see me standing there for 2 hours talking. I've never seen anything like it, riding in a plane. Anyway, never been in that position either. But at one point, one of them said, are you one of those people that can, like, I forget what the term that was used, but say, you know, is this a good move? With my family, we just decided to move to another state from one place. Was it the right decision? Now, it's a no-brainer to be honest and say, no, I don't. But it's, you know, if one is deceptive, one can say, oh, yes, I have, you know, that sounds very good. Or something. When persons repose faith, you should be worthy of that faith. And simply speak that which with conviction you know. That is, you know, it's from higher authority. It's not just, you know, speculative or something. So he's trusting. And one more time, by addressing in that way, it invokes that fullness of their capacity. It strengthens the relationship of trust and trustworthiness. A little cultural point in Vaishnava relationships. And if one doesn't have trust, then one should work on trust, or approach those that you have trust, just to ask and then not follow. What's that? That's another duplicity. One should be prepared. But the inquisitive spirit is imperative. If one wants to advance on the path of spiritual life, Brahma Jigyasa is fundamental. And Brahma Jigyasa means beyond circumstantial. But, you know, going to the essence. To enter into the realm of spirit, the realm of the eternal, beyond this temporal. What path should I follow? What should I do? That's what he's asking. And Kṛtiyatām, of all the different duties. So Prabhupada, somebody have a cell phone on that's making that buzz? Can we debuzz? So Prabhupada discusses this in the purport. He recognizes, he's Maharaj Parikshit. He knows there's a lot of stuff out there. There's this idea, that idea, that idea, the other idea. And he's got a whole assembly of sages. And he knows they've got different ideas. You know, ask a bunch of learned fellows, what's your idea? You've got a lot of different ideas. And people, this is, you know, one of those questions that people ask in the Swami circuit. Why are there so many religions? And then one that follows that is, or the companion is, how do I decide? Or another one is, everyone says they're right. So what to do? You know, some people are just really stuck on that. You know, they decide they're going to do nothing. Or they'll just kind of do a smorgasbord and pick something here and pick something there and think that's, you know, that you've heard the phrase, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. I'm like, you know, another way of saying the same thing is I'm committed to nothing. And then I decide what's spiritual. Without qualification. I'm deciding what's spiritual because I don't want... I see so many things and I see clashes between this religion, that religion, and therefore I don't want part of religion. I just want to be spiritual. There's a... I can't remember the exact... It's a cute little phrase. Somebody at the end... Chaitanya Nanda in New York. At the bottom of letters that he sends, there's a little phrase that he writes that says something like, if you're not committed to something, then you're committed to nothing. Something like that. So many religions, why? Simple answer from Bhagavad Gita perspective, the divisions of faith, it's because there's modes of nature. So Prabhupada says, you know, first, second, third class, and goodness, passion, and ignorance. And according to faith, there's an arrangement. And Krishna creates the arrangement, and Krishna strengthens the faith. And people that have faith in the mode of ignorance, they may even invoke the name of God, and in the name of God, mode of ignorance, destruction. In the name of God. And they have strong faith. And they live according to their faith. And they try to convince other people to, you know, get on board with their faith. Mode of passion. Prosper. And, you know, and if there's a lot of people that get on board. It's one of the megachurch kind of platforms of, you know, prosper. And as you prosper, the church should prosper. So give money to the church because God is favoring you. I mean, putting it in real stark terms, but it goes on. And then there's mode of goodness. And Prabhupada is using plural. There's first grade methods of duty. And then, so when someone's approaching Krishna consciousness, they may not say so explicitly, but you can count on it. It's something that they're processing, you know, silently. On what basis should I accept this? Bhagavat Dharma. It's another entity that says we got the answers. But I know so many entities that say they have the answers. So many methods. And particularly amongst an Indian audience, they've learned is be very accommodating for everything. That's what Hinduism is. It's khichdi. It's many things. And we don't, you know, we're just very accepting. That's Hinduism. We're accepting of this and that and the other thing. And so many things. And that's, you know, we shouldn't pick and choose and say, this is second class, this is third class, and this is first class. We shouldn't do that. That's not Hinduism. I have my preference. He has his preference. Another, they have their preference, and that's okay because that's Hinduism. So Bhagavad Dharma. I want to address for a little bit both how we help persons become acquainted with Bhagavad Dharma and select Bhagavad Dharma. What should we do in order to make that presentation? What should we not do? Start with what we should not do. We shouldn't be condescending, saying, you know, we got the first class and something. That's maybe okay, but it's second class, third class. We shouldn't be condescending. And something that I see too often is the stick program. You know, somebody comes, you know, we become expert at, you know, hitting with our philosophy. Smash and smash and smash. The worst part about it is that the more that tendency is there, generally speaking, the more one is not a good example of, in their own personal life, of what the teaching is. But they're very expert at, you know, putting down other ideas. That's something not to do. Or the way that I visited Hari Vilas, or Seattle, and visited Hari Vilas twice in the last month, and he has a very strong platform of growing his congregation. So I'm sharing that the principle that he speaks about of we don't be too broad, don't be too narrow. He doesn't use that language, but he particularly emphasizes don't be too narrow. Our interest is not simply to get people to follow this standard, that standard. Our interest is to have them give their heart to the process, to Bhagavad Dharma process at whatever stage they may be, and it drives people away. I mean, they've studied, so I'm sharing this with you so that you can also apply some of these principles here. They've studied that. In fact, I received a letter that one of them sent. Somebody came and they attended this program, that program. They're thinking of enrolling. Bhakti Purushottamara shared the same thing about their school in Mayapur. It's a principle. And because, well, one thing was the facilities were too, in Mayapur, were not nice for their school. But the other is, you know, that the personalities were not accommodating to a new person that wanted to participate in their school, or Harivilas's example of persons coming to the temple and people just getting on their case, well, you're not following this, you're not following that. Prabhupada didn't do that. It was months before even Prabhupada gave what the regular principles are. He captured their heart and purified them through the process of chanting and his loving association to the point where they then asked, what standards? Aren't there some things we're supposed to not be doing? Aren't there some restrictions and regulations, Swamiji? Yes. I'll give them tomorrow. He was not at all in a hurry. And he gave them. Now that's Srila Prabhupada, and that's the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement. But, you know, the magnanimity of Srila Prabhupada drew people to Krishna consciousness. They didn't know what Krishna consciousness, they just knew him. And they were happy to be with him doing whatever he wanted to do, because of his love and his affection and his purity. And then he gave. So when we're helping persons to understand Bhagavad Dharma, we should not be too narrow. What we should do is express principle, just like this conversation I had with these two stewardesses. And by the way, they now have books and they're now wanting to visit a temple. Now hopefully when they visit a temple, they'll be received by devotees who won't be too strict and will, you know, just nurture their curiosity, find out what's their need or in their concern or their interest. You've heard these before. Needs and interest. It's in the leadership program that Nutama teaches. It's called NIC, N-I-C. Needs, interest, and concerns. And find out what that is, and then just give attention to that. Find out where they're at and hang out with them where they're at, what they're interested in. And if they start asking questions, you know, even the answers to those questions, like Prabhupada, yes, there's some standards. But it's, you know, this is, and so, we'll go back and saying too broad, as in, you know, yatama tatopat. That's not our program. Or another one is just add Krishna and stir. You know, whatever you got going on, just add Krishna. In one sense, you know, that's interesting, but that's not really what Krishna consciousness is, because we do have standards. But that which can attract the person, attract, not push, but attract, not like, you know, it's like getting on the backside and pushing them, getting on the front side and attracting them to some aspect of Krishna and Bhagavad Dharma. That's what to do. And explain. Another thing that Prabhupada very carefully did was why, not just what. But if there's a what question, it's very helpful to give the why answer. Here's what and here's why. Not in a condescending way or a stick way or a narrow way, but with thoughtfulness. So a thoughtful person can go, well, I'm not really ready to be a vegetarian, but I can see the value in it. Not like, oh, I got to be vegetarian, and you got your stick after me, so I think I better go somewhere else. So what Maharaj Pariksit is interested in, we'll go back to the text, what he's interested in is receiving the first class, or the word that's used, referred to again in the purport, is shuddham. Perfectly correct. Out of all the range of things, there's the mode of goodness ones, and the mode of goodness ones, I'd like the perfectly correct, like that which is going to be most helpful, because I only have 7 days. And so, sarvatmana is the next word. What's it has two meanings. Sarva atmana can mean that which is good for all persons in all circumstances. And so that's one of the questions. But it's also, he's looking for consensus. Please come to common agreement. Sarva atmana, amongst yourselves, what is that? Please come to a point of agreement on what is that which is superlatively best. And you're trustworthy. You're trustworthy, learned persons. So what's the essence? Is that's basically what he's asking. The topmost means of performance of duty. Can you put that in pause for a second? I'm going to ask. Okay, so we'll get back to the receiving mode and discriminating mode are both fully operative in Maharaj Pariksit. And for to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, we need to follow that standard or principle. He wants not just something, and similarly, we should want to receive the transcendental knowledge and the essence of transcendental knowledge, not just what's comfortable for us, or I like, I don't like, but what is that pure connection with Krishna? He's asking in terms of duty. I can share this with you that many persons, when they speak, come forward with, what is my duty? They're not thinking in terms of the essence. They're thinking in terms of the worldly thing. Should I do this or should I do that? Should I put weight on this or should I put weight on that? In terms of the worldly aspect, without consideration of the transcendental essence that's going to make this or that elevating. The mere fact that someone is considering what is my duty, there's certainly a quality of goodness behind that question. What is my duty? But again, largely it is terms of the world, the aspect, not in terms of the transcendental one. Let's say, for example, see, there's some conflict with some relative. My practice of Krishna consciousness has come to a certain stage, but my family members have a certain expectation of me, my mother, father, in-laws, or whatever it is, and what's my duty, for example. Now, the determination of duty, you could fast forward and go right to this question of Maharaj Parikshit, and the answer that Prabhupada has given in the purport already. But it's the focus, ideally the focus should go to the essence. So what is a worldly duty in comparison to the transcendental duty? The transcendental duty is, this is a duty, but the transcendental duty takes priority. Like sarvadharmam pratyaja, mam ekam sharanam. Now, it doesn't mean that if you surrender unto Krishna, you can be negligent in your worldly duties. That's not what the verse says. But when you're fully surrendered unto Krishna as the primary duty, that will give you a clear, or at least a more clear, indication of should I do this or should I do that, and what weight to put on them. And then when you do this or do that, it's with full dependence upon and surrender unto Krishna. And that's the elevating factor. Quite often, one more time, the essence is lost. The connection with Krishna is lost in favor of doing the right thing. Actually, I don't want to do the wrong thing and be negligent in my duty. So many applications of the principle. I want to focus upon the principle. That's what Maharaj Parikshit wants. And our inquisitive spirit should be that. That which is going to take us to the stage that the human form of life is meant to achieve. You know, the designer of this human form of life is Krishna. What's the intention? How to do my duty in all circumstances of life. So leave aside the particulars and what's the essence. And then, in addition, I'm about to die. What do I do right now? So, we just had this experience in Chicago where one of the children in the community, 4.5 years old, was diagnosed as having a virulent type of cancer that they had no way of treating. There wasn't even the possibility of doing this or that, chemotherapy or something or something. And it had reached the stage that the doctors told the parents and told the boy, you have 2 to 3 weeks and there's nothing we can do to help you. So it's similar. When that notice comes, wow, does one get serious? And the idea in the Sarvatmana is, it's not just, you know, it's a lifetime of preparation for that moment, but, you know, we don't even know when that moment is. So, you know, each, in one sense, each morning's chanting should be as if it might be your last, because one morning it will be your last, whether there's notice or not. Not, you know, in a morbid mood, but in a realistic mood. And this was one of the persons sharing. We had a memorial service at the temple some days after the cremation. And Donna Kelly. Some of you may know Donna Kelly, Pritra Shrava's wife. She's a very strong person, very sober, very Krishna conscious. No nonsense. She's just like, you know, she knows what Krishna consciousness is, and that's what she does. She's very exemplary Vaishnavi and very compassionate. So she was sharing that her realization was Krishna Das had notice, but who's to say? He was surrounded. She was one of the ones that was surrounding him with, you know, strong, intense, sincerely expressed chanting of the holy name. And that was the condition under which he left his body. But we don't know if that's going to happen to us. It could be, and she gave some examples, it could be this or it could be that. And we don't know. So, if, you know, 4.5-year-old and we are whatever we are, who knows? It can happen to a 4.5-year-old. Why not? Whatever our age. It's totally uncertain. Therefore, sarvatmana, in all circumstances, that sobriety should be there, or that intensity of ultimate purpose, not just muddling and getting by to the next day so that later on I'll then, you know, get more serious. Anyway, you get the idea. That's the spirit of wanting to receive that one who's going to advance in Krishna consciousness should have. It's, you know, we're getting a cameo picture here of the nine processes of bhakti. Shravanam, the first one. Maharaj Pariksit achieved perfection through Shravanam, and we're getting the anatomy of perfection. This eagerness to receive the essence. Boy, if we can read Srimad Bhagavatam like that and chant our japa like that and do our puja like that, we'll make rapid advancement. Not just, you know, again, not in a morbid sense of, oh, I might die in a moment, but because it's true, but the eagerness to receive, whatever that may happen, the eagerness to receive. I want to be in my relationship with Krishna. That's, you know, a very nice phrase in one word that was expressed by Dina Tarani, the lifelong companion of Mother Jamuna, was the word need. Each of us should understand what we need. And if the need is the relationship with Krishna, not just, hey, that would be nice, maybe sometime and eventually I'll get there, but if it's a need, like, you know, when we're hungry, we need, or we're tired, we need, or we're thirsty, we need. So in life, what is it that we need? What's that essence? And then you're in this receiving mode. And you want that which is going to deliver what you need. So he wants the sages to deliver that. So there's a discriminating element, and there's a receiving element. Kind of like left brain, right brain. There's that the science of Krishna consciousness is we have to know what is the goal and be eager, because we can't just go and get it. We have to receive it. That's the qualification of Maharaj Pariksit, or the qualification of one who is receiving Krishna consciousness. And if we receive Krishna consciousness, then we can give it. And if we haven't received the essence, then what we're doing is injustice to us and to others, at least less than what Krishna consciousness can mean for us and for others. And it's not someone else is going to do it for you. You know, I've got a nice group of people here. We're all nice devotees, and you're all nice devotees. We're all, you know, sanghas of, but individually, it's our responsibility. It's not that the group is going to do it for us, or someone else is going to do it for us, or a spouse is going to do it for us, or our children are going to do it for us, or our friends are going to do it for us, or a spiritual master is going to do it for us. We have to do it ourselves. We have to receive and discriminate what is it that we want to receive, so that when it comes, we got it. And we value it, and we're going back to the discussion yesterday evening, we're feeling gratitude. There's a very nice purport in Prayers by the Personified Vedas, 10th canto, chapter 87, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks about this, that it's the best way to have this experience of gratitude is where the receiving person, the disciple, tries to consider from various angles what it is that's being given to me. So you can recognize what it is, how rare, precious, valuable, critical, essential this is. And then when that is done, it's the means of not only understanding what it is, but feeling gratitude, appraising the worth and value. It's like, you know, you take some gold or a diamond to an appraiser. What's this worth? What's the value of this gold or this thing? So they know. So we can't have somebody do that for us with spiritual life. We have to do it ourselves. And when we're introducing Bhagavad Dharma to others, we can take the same position. Krishna takes the position with Arjuna. Consider carefully and then do what you feel you must do. It's your decision. Here's the principles. What do you think? Then some dialogue. Well, I'm not sure because of... And then further dialogue. And okay, that makes sense. And because the person has to make a decision. And we also have to make a decision. You know, what is it that we need? And has this matched that need? Is this the genuine thing? You know, faith, like Kamal Krishnamurti, when he went back to college at SMU, he chose, you know, Kamal Krishnamurti was very picky and deliberate about what he did. So each of the assignments that he took was to compose a book, Faith and Reason. That was the title of the book. It was just a collection of papers that he did to finish his undergraduate degree at SMU. The book, Faith and Reason. Because it's theologically a critical issue. How much do we just accept on faith, and how much is supported by reason? The discerning faculty must be exercised. But discerning faculty alone is inadequate. So faith is also required. And ultimately, we need the proper source to even, you know, exercise our discriminating capacity. We need mercy. Or, you know, we're stuck in the material world. But when we're receiving mercy, we should be discriminating what that is. Arjuna asked lots of questions. Maharaj Pariksit asked lots of questions. Asking questions is shows the lights on. Somebody's home. Somebody is thinking in a discriminating way about, well, what is this? And how do I apply it? What's the essence? What's the principle? So that's necessary to make advancement from the Maharaj Pariksit position, from one who is hearing, receiving, and proper discrimination, and knowing where to repose that. And opening one's own heart to the qualifications of those and deliverers. Here's the sages, and next it's going to be Shukadeva Goswami, certainly the premier qualified person to deliver. One other point that's in the purport is, I'll read the last sentence that Prabhupada writes. The first class method demands that one gives up all other methods and surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus be saved from all sins and their reactions. That's kind of a paraphrase of 1866, Bhagavad Gita. But the application of that is that we need not be in anxiety if this is a faith issue. What we used to do is not precisely what we do today. Like each of us, before we were practicing Krishna consciousness, we were doing something. And we were opposing our faith in that something. And then there comes this existential dilemma space that says, well, what about that thing that I used to do? Should I bring it along with me? And when we ourselves or are helping others make that choice in that existential dilemma realm, we don't hit the person with a stick and say, yes, give it up. But we, with reason, we explain that you need not continue. You may continue, but you need not continue because it's already there in the process of surrender unto Krishna. Sometimes accommodating someone's carrying that other thing along with them until that point where their faith has matured in exclusive bhakti may be the best advice to give that person. Like in the beginning, we may say to somebody, whatever it is that you're doing, I say this regularly, whatever it is that you're doing, just keep doing it. Take the Maha Mantra, chant the Maha Mantra faithfully every day for some amount of time, whatever you are sharing with that person, for 2 weeks. See what happens. One of the things that's going to happen is some of those things are going to disappear. But it's not like you have to shake a stick at them and say you have to give up some of those things. That will happen in due course. But when the due course comes, the for those of us that are practicing Krishna consciousness now with some diligence, our faith should be exclusive. It's in the language of nectar devotion also. Love is exclusive. Because Krishna is the source of everything, it's all inclusive. Love of Krishna is all inclusive. But love goes to Krishna. Bhakti goes to Krishna. And by serving Krishna, we're serving the Vaishnavas. And by serving the Vaishnavas, we're serving Krishna. We don't see the Vaishnavas separate from Krishna. It's serving the Vaishnavas because they're Vaishnavas, we're serving Krishna. Krishna is pleased. And then you can expand the circle. As much as you're genuinely advanced in spiritual realization, you serve everyone. Not just out of motive goodness, and you don't want to step on ants or something, but, you know, out of spiritual acumen, spiritual realization. They're also parts of Krishna. Not just out of morality and nonviolence, but out of spiritual realization. That's spiritual realization. Everything comes from Krishna. Everything comes from our devotion to Krishna in Bhagavad Dharma. So it's exclusive. Do we need to perform this ritual, that ritual, the other ritual? The answer is we don't need to perform them. There may be Vaishnava ways of recognizing similar things. We may include that. But everything, actually all that we need to do is chant Hare Krishna. That's if our faith is genuine and we have the why questions answered, then that's all that's required. It's all that's required. It's all that's required. And can we add other things? Yeah, we can add other things. And the adding other things are given strength because the strength that comes from the chanting of the holy name. Then that's called culture. cultural presentation of Krishna consciousness. I'll just read the other verses that are on the same, exact same message. It's texts 36 through 40 of this chapter. Here, Shukadev Goswami is being asked the same question by Maharaj Parikshit. Text 36. Shukadev Goswami has just come. Maharaj Parikshit is just beginning to speak. He says, otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here, though you are moving incognito to the common man and are not visible to us who are on the verge of death? You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show me the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one who is about to die. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, and remember and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. O powerful Brahmana, it is said that you hardly stay in the house of men long enough to milk a cow. Like, you know, you're going to disappear in a moment, so please speak quickly. And that's what Prabhupada says in the purport, you know, that a mendicant does not dally, you know, the 5 minutes he gives a time limit. Long enough to milk the cow, thank you very much. He's gone. So the householder should, when that opportunity comes, be charitable, yes, but also that's their seva, but they should also inquire, inquisitive spirit. What's relevant for my spiritual well-being? Prabhupada writes, the householders also should be intelligent enough to get some transcendental information from visiting sages. Then what they should not do is, the householder should not foolishly ask a saint to deliver what is available in the marketplace. You know, like, otherworldly, not worldly. Can you give us your blessings that our daughter finds a nice husband, or that my son passes his exam and gets a nice job, or something that's available in the marketplace? That should be the reciprocal relation between the saints and the householders. The chapter ends. Sutta Goswami said, the king thus spoke and questioned the sage using sweet language. Then the great and powerful personality, the son of Vyasadeva, who knew the principles of religion, began his reply. He hasn't spoken yet through the whole first canto. And he's the speaker of the Bhagavatam. One canto has passed and he hasn't said peep. Just a cultural point quickly. Two cultural points. The relationship between the Varnashram system is great. It's really scientific, and when it's applied, it's fantastic. There's a natural relationship between householders and grihasthas. Some have this disposition, some have that disposition, and that's fine. The householder shouldn't think this way about this, and vice versa. When there's due respect, that's wholesome. And when there's due respect, it's very beneficial. The householders having, of necessity, contact with material resources, they're charitable in order to become not attached and contaminated by contact with those material resources. They have to have, and they have to be charitable. And the renunciate has to be renounced and at the same time has to be maintained. And so they go to the home of the householder not to be maintained, but to give. If they go simply to be maintained and not to give, then they're not a mendicant. They're disqualified, and they will not be able to remain on that platform. Or they're already not on that platform. They're just pretending to be on that platform. But when the qualification of both is right, then one is to uplift the other. And it's enlivening for the mendicant or renunciate, Shukadeva Goswami follower, to be in the company of those who are eager to hear. And it's not inviting to go where there's someone that's not eager to hear, or give charity begrudgingly, or give charity because they, you know, in the mode of passion, thinking I'm going to get something because I just gave charity. Without the thoughtfulness to inquire in higher spiritual matters. The fullness comes when it's performed properly. There's beauty, natural beauty in Varnashram when it's properly performed. But to have that happen, both the sannyasi or the renunciate and the grihastha need to have this spirit within them that says, I'd like to receive the ultimate benefit that this human form of life offers. Although the positions may be different, that spirit must be awake. Then, with proper values and proper culture, it can be ideal. And the second point is, the grihastha can also be so qualified. In our line, it's maybe one-third, two-thirds, but one-third is householders, grihasthas, with family and children and all those responsibilities. But they also can be fully sadhu. We're going to read some verses after breakfast on that covers that point also more deeply. Okay, I kind of touched on a number of different topics connected to this verse. Let's see if there's some discussion. Any questions or comments?
I'm one of those person who has been saying that I'm not religious but a spiritual. I try to follow that path. And I have difficulty accepting any religion. I'm not comfortable saying myself as a Hindu. I'm not sure that we are Hindu or Christian or Islam or any other. In my mind, the main thing is to find love for Krishna and try to do that, and to be nice to other, do the right things, and which is kind of common in a lot of religion. And I have taken up upon Hare Krishna after looking at many different religions, read Bible and Quran, and I've been to Baha'i faith, and Baha'i was a little attractive to me, but eventually I came to Krishna consciousness, and it answered a lot of questions for me. And at the same time, to belong to a, you know, something which has a beginning has an end, and most of the religions have a beginning. I don't know if you got the gist of my question or not.
You're not asking a question, you're making a comment or a statement.
I'm trying to understand whether are we Hindu? That's primarily my question.
Your question is, you're trying to understand what?
Whether the process we follow is that Hinduism.
The process that we follow is?
Hinduism?
Yeah, are we Hindu? Because no. A lot of things we do is like Hindu, and at the same time, your comment was kind of, in my mind, unsettling to me that
I'm sorry.
Some people say that we are not religious, but it's spiritual, and I thought that that's what we were trying to be.
Okay, let me respond. My comment was not to say that that Krishna consciousness is a religion in the worldly sense of religion. What I was speaking about is persons that are committed to nothing. And they receive no guidance other than from their mind. Their mind is their authority, rather than a descending process is their authority. And under that authority, they are governed. That's what I was addressing. We'll go back to the first one. As you've rightly put it, Prabhupada has said it over and over again, Krishna consciousness is not an ism, you know, a system of beliefs under this brand or that brand. It's Vaishnavism, it's that kind of an ism, but it's principles rather than, like, you know, from our perspective, Christ was a Vaishnava. Prabhupada said it explicitly. Pure devotee. So, in that sense, beyond the limitations of this religion, that religion, this set of beliefs, that set of beliefs, and I just change beliefs and it's like changing clothes or, you know, something. And I take on a different identity just because I've changed clothes. Now I'm a soldier and now I'm an actor and now I'm a basketball player or something because I changed clothes. So it's not an external thing as religion is an external thing, but what's the essence? Could you move that? Yeah. So from the perspective that you spoke, you received the understanding that Prabhupada gave. This is not a religion in that sense, but you are a follower of a descending system of knowledge with descending authority that governs your life. So you're doing something that most persons who say, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, don't do. They don't follow any authority other than their mind. And that's not what you're doing. So there's a distinction, and thank you for bringing it up. And, you know, are we Hindu? Certainly we've heard Srila Prabhupada say, no, this is not. Because what Hindu is you know, all those things that Prabhupada said. Those that live on the other side of the Sindhu River are Hindus. Because they couldn't speak S properly. It became H. So Hindu is not a word in anywhere in the Vedas. What is it? That's what it is. It's people that live on that side of the river. And as followers of the Vedas, even that, we're followers of the Vedas, but very specifically, followers of the tradition of worshipping Vishnu or Vaishnavas. That's what we are. So it's Vedic. Scriptural authority is guiding us and directing us. And the line of Vaishnavism through the Gaudiya Vaishnav line is what's guiding us. We're receiving it in disciplic succession. That's what's guiding us. But the principles are universal, not this religion, that religion. You're settled again. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. Maharaj, regarding the discerning portion, thinking like we have faith in what we are receiving and trust in what we are receiving. So where does the discerning portion come into play? As not clear.
I expressed it. I'll say it again. One should look at that which one has received from various angles. What is it? I have faith in it, but now let me make sure I understand what it is. And thus I'll have an appreciation of how valuable it is. So understanding what it is also understanding what it isn't. It's not a belief system. Although there's belief, or there's faith. It's transcendental knowledge of the transcendental world coming in the form of sound. And well, let me look at it very carefully from different angles. The discerning faculty is active, guided certainly by faith. And as Arjuna did, or as Maharaj Pariksit is doing, when the discerning faculty is active, just like you're doing right now by your question, you're getting clarity, distinguishing this from that. That's what discernment does. Discriminating between this and that. That's intelligence. That should be active. As part of the receiving process. Part of the inquisitive spirit that says, I want to know. But it's not merely a ascending or, you know, I'm going to figure it out. Spirit, it's a, I want to receive it and I want to make sure I've understood. So that's the discerning. A very nice example of this is in the sixth canto, where Prabhupada explains that essentially Shukadeva Goswami is testing Maharaj Pariksit to see if he has understood properly what he said previously by giving an incomplete answer. And in a very respectful manner, Maharaj Pariksit expresses, I have a doubt about what you just said because it seems that it's not what you said previously. And Maharaj Pariksit is rewarded. Very good. You've heard very carefully. So that's the discerning faculty, discriminating faculty, when receiving. It needs to be done respectfully, not in a challenging spirit. Pranipat, that submission, doesn't mean turn your intelligence off. But in the spirit of wanting to know with intelligence on. And knowing the limitation of my intelligence, but still, I have to use it. What Krishna has given me, so that I can recognize what it is that I've received, and then thus value it, and not let it slip away. And that's all under the bigger umbrella of faith. It's not an indication of faithlessness to do so. It's a component of faith. It strengthens one's faith. Okay. Okay. Oh my goodness. can't they just like, did you receive the question? Can we do it that way? Yeah, we'll do some other questions. They can, you can offline get their question and ask it. Anyone else back there?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
I can hear you.
I don't know if I'm able to put the question in the words, but I'm just trying to.